Writers Podcast.
Hello, boys.
Hello there.
Good.
Hello.
I was going to say good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
We don't know when people are listening.
That's the whole point, isn't it? Let's keep it generic.
Just covering all bases.
Say them
good
all.
Day.
Good day or night.
Good.
Again, they might be listening in the middle of the night. It's terrible,
good.
Isn't it?
Good time to you all. Good unspecified time, everybody.
Yeah, greetings.
Greetings.
We're just going to be greetings.
Let's just say hello. Hello and welcome
everyone
to the show.
Everyone has invented words for these things.
I know.
Why?
Well, now we've got that smooth, slick introduction out of the way, what have we got today, chaps?
It's our Halloween special.
Ooh. Yeah. So we've got a few little things lined up. We are concluding our trick or tweet online Twitter Halloween flash, super flash 280 character fiction.
That's, yeah.
Title's getting too long, isn't it? But you get the gist. Story competition.
That title was longer than all of the stories.
It wouldn't have fitted in, would it? Wouldn't have fitted in. So we will find out later on who has won 50 English
£50
and a T-shirt for their endeavours.
Wow. And have we got, before you,
so we're going to
do
that,
live.
Tom,
have we actually got any T-shirts left? Because we didn't order that many in the first place.
Do you know what? I think we've only got maybe like a medium and some large. We've run out of small. We might have run out of extra.
This is going to dictate who's allowed to win the competition.
Sorry,
isn't
we should
it?
Have asked people to. We are going to have to look at their Twitter photos and just kind of ascertain what sort of size they are. So if you're a child in the event of the competition, you're probably not going to win. Unless you're a fat kid. Unless you're a really fat kid. So I don't know. So we'll do that later on. We're going to do that. We're going to do the judging live. So we haven't shared it with each other what our top threes are or anything like that. We're going to just do it.
Right now. Nobody knows.
I feel like that's going to go really well, by the way.
I can't see anything going wrong with that.
No.
But it's exciting. No one knows who's going to win.
No.
Right up to the last minute. Yeah. Right now, no one knows who's going to win.
Before we reveal the winner, we've got an interview, haven't we, John, that you lined up?
We have indeed. We've got an interview with the very lovely Sun Yi Dean, who has written a book called The Book Eaters. And I am...
What's it about, John?
Well, I'm going to read you... Well, this is actually about Sun Yi Dean. I'm going to read it off the back of the book.
Ooh, excellent.
Sun Yi Dean is an autistic author of fantasy fiction. Born in the States and raised in Hong Kong, she now lives in Yorkshire with her children. When not reading, running, falling over in yoga or rolling D20s, she sometimes escapes the city to wild swim in lonely dales.
Mm.
She's also got a sausage dog.
Ah.
So that makes her... pretty great in my eyes.
Well, in that case, it's time for the interview with the vampire, brackets, author.
Nice, Dave.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Sun Yi, I think it was probably the honesty of your blog that led me to your book. Because I thought if someone can be that honest about their writing journey, then their books are probably going to be quite interesting.
I've got to give Cameron Hurley credit for that one. I started reading her blog a few years ago, and it was the first time I'd actually seen someone writing honestly about the industry, and that was very eye-opening.
Yeah. I mean, it is fascinating, isn't it? Because if you looked on Twitter, a lot of the time you'd think that, you know, everyone, you know, have these astonishing writing careers and, you know... And it's just you. It's just you that's struggling, A, to write, and B, to, you know, find an agent or get published. But it is really good. There's a brilliant section of your blog for those who don't know about it. It's titled Publishing Quest, which very much highlights just how hard it is to be a writer. But it's also very inspiring. And there's a bit in it, and I have it here somewhere, there's a bit in it where you talk about the process of writing your first novel, and it's actually quite painful to read, but it goes like this. I had around 24 beta readers for Origin of Sight. I've lost count exactly. And I needed every single one. I had so many because the first 14 readers in a row could not get past chapter 2. Dense, inaccessible, full of passive writing, confusing, no emotion, no character connection, too much world building, no pacing, no tension, no interest, on and on and on. Every craft flaw you can think of, and I had it. And this was after my rewrite. So I kept rewriting. I rewrote that entire book every month for 4 months.
Good grief.
I thought that was brilliant. That was so good to hear.
Yeah.
Because that is how writing feels. It is slog. Do you know what I mean?
It is, yeah. I learned by failure, so there was a lot of failing that had to go on first, I think.
Oh, we like to hear about that, yeah. But obviously, I mean, the lovely thing is, obviously, in your story, Sonia, is that you have a book now, and it's a very good book as well.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about that journey. Obviously, we've read the blog and we know a bit about you, but it'd be really great to just sort of have a kind of an insight in your words. What was that like from the beginning?
When I was a kid, I had this brilliant idea that I'd be a writer. And then I worked out a few months later that everyone else wanted to do that too. And it wasn't actually that brilliant and novel an idea. So I think even then as a kid, I'd looked into it and gone, oh yeah, actually the odds of actually becoming a writer are so astronomical that for you to actually see success, it's very daunting. Mm. And I mean, I don't know if you ever looked into the figures of it, but it's something like you've got a 1 in 1,000 chance of getting an agent.
Oh, just getting an agent.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the average agent is 3,000 queries a year, assigns 3 people. The average Big Five editor signs 1 to 3% of agented material landing on their desk. It's kind of crazy when you think of it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, out of that, once you get published, 80% of people have left the industry by book 3.
Yeah.
And 90% by book 6. So to have long-term kind of survivability, it's so demanding as an industry, and it's very grueling. And yeah. So I think, I didn't know those exact figures, but I knew it was difficult and I just put it aside for a long time. And I think I kept coming back on and off to writing. I used to write a lot of fanfic, Wheel of Time fan fiction for my sins.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's a good,
that's cutting your teeth, isn't it? That's, yeah.
It's a good training ground. And I think sometime when I was about 29, just after that 29th birthday, I had my early midlife crisis where I realized I was going to go my whole life and not have done something that mattered to me. So that's when I started trying to write. And it was just a kind of frenetic, grueling study. I gave myself 2 years because I thought naively, oh yeah, that's loads of time. If you're going to get published, it'll happen in 2 years.
It's a long time, isn't it? 2 years? Yeah. Maybe get a few books published.
I'll write the book and then I'll get an agent in a month or so and go from there. And it's just that level of naivety kind of staggers me now. But you don't know. When you explain the industry to people who don't know it, they're blown away. Because it is actually shocking.
It's quite useful, that naivety at the start, though. It's quite useful, isn't it?
It is.
In terms of actually getting stuff done.
It is.
Your bubble's not been burst, and you've still got that kind of little spring in your step that you think, oh, yeah, I'll be on the shelves in a couple of months. Mm. Brilliant. Crack on.
It is, yeah. I think naivety and love of your manuscript have to carry you a long way. You don't know how hard it's going to be, and you really believe every time this revision will be the last. And that kind of mindset just really gets you through a lot.
I guess that's where the 90% of people falling out of the industry after, what was it, their sixth book or something?
By book 6, only 10%.
Yeah, once you've kind of burnt out there, you've got to have some real qualities that are going to drive you through doing it again and again and again.
Yeah, and I think it's often not up to people. I think, especially nowadays, a lot of people get stuck in the midlist vicious cycle and just end up squeezed out of the industry. Yeah. There's not a lot they can do about it.
When you were picked up by an agent, Sonia, were they specific about what it was that they saw?
Yes. I mean, so some background info on that. When I signed with an agent, I wasn't yet diagnosed as autistic. And now, a few years down the line, both I and my agent are, and I think that was a part of the connection. And actually, a lot of Naomi's clients are autistic. And I think that kind of work resonates with them. So I think there's a factor there. There's definitely a luck element. For example, that book, which hasn't seen the light of day, had a Sumerian mythology in it. And I think I almost picked it on a whim. And as it turned out, that's just something that she really likes.
Wow.
But other than that, it was voice, I guess. Voice is the main thing. That manuscript was definitely a mess, world building and pacing wise. And it was too short. But so I think it was just voice and character.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting what you were saying about your autism, because there's some nice bits in your blog about neurodiversity and what your autism actually feels like. and how you've been able to actually overcome it as an author. Because I think in the blog you mention one of the major bits of feedback on your earlier writing was that your characters don't have enough emotional connection.
Yeah.
How did you kind of work on that aspect of it?
I read craft books on it. So I read a book that probably changed my writing. I don't read a lot of craft books, but I read The Emotional Craft of Fiction by Donald Mass.
Right.
And I mean, I hesitate to say this. I don't recommend him as an agent, but as a craft teacher, his book is excellent. And his books in general are very insightful. And they are all about creating space for people's emotional reactions, instead of kind of dictating emotions and being heavy-handed. You know, you give people space in a book to have their own emotional reaction, and that's stronger than telling them how to feel, because that doesn't work.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I think I've read a lot of books as well on, you can get like emotional thesauruses,
right,
which link people's actions to how they're feeling, and that was actually helpful in a real life way, because I have difficulty naming my own emotions. So I could read that and be like, oh, I'd do this, and that must mean I feel like this. And
right.
It was very interesting, actually, very instrumental. I do think writing's easier than regular communication. You don't have to get it exactly right. You can describe a scene and say, if you're describing a funeral and it makes, you know, the reader comes, reads it and they go, oh, that's kind of funny. That's fine, as long as they have an emotional reaction that doesn't involve throwing a book against the wall. In real life, you have to get things more exact. You can't have a conversation about a funeral makes one laugh if that's not the goal. So I like that writing has a little bit of freedom, that it's to be almost provocative rather than communicative at times. That's easier.
And you can edit a book as well. Whereas you, if you say something bad at a funeral, it's quite hard to, to bring it back in.
Yeah. And all dialogue in a book has a purpose. And, you know, real life dialogue will frustrate me because it goes all over the place, and people will talk without, they're just talking to, it's like social grooming is one of my friends called it. It's about reciprocal kind of attention and not communication. And in a book, everything's communication. So
So you can really zoom into a particular emotion or a particular character. Let's talk about your book. It's called The Book Eaters. I was trying to think of a good way of explaining it. It's quite a hard book.
The premise is totally ridiculous.
It's quite hard to explain, isn't it? I'm glad you said that, because I jotted down two descriptions. One was like a sort of genre thing. It was like it's a cross-genre novel that encompasses horror with like family drama and escape adventure. And then I was thinking, that doesn't really kind of give you a good idea. So then I was like, okay, if you took A Handmaid's Tale and added a few vampires and almost like the feel of a Bronte novel thrown into the mix, and then you turn up the heat, you'd end up with something like The Book Eaters.
No, I was going to say, one reviewer described it as a fairy tale allegory stapled to a thriller. I think that works.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
For me.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was, the pages turned and I cared about the characters. And I noticed that despite having a very nice, satisfying ending, you have left a little opening for a sequel.
It's not, so I did expect the book to be a series when I put it on submission, because that's normal for fantasy. Tor felt very strongly it should be standalone, so I'm weirdly contracted for three standalones.
Which
is a kind of a direction that actually I think Tor is moving in. They're acquiring more standalone deals.
Oh, that's interesting.
For a variety of business reasons. Basically, the readership drops a lot between a series. It's a lot of investment if it doesn't work.
I see.
So technically, it is standalone, and I have to finish the two more standalones before we can talk about a sequel. But that's why there are certain things in the book that certain plot arcs are moved up, like the romance, which I would have saved for another book, was moved up. Plot points, which I wanted to resolve initially, there wasn't space for, are just left. One day
they can be wrapped up. That are unresolved and I want the answers to, but that's a good thing, because if you do come back to it, you've got an audience built in already.
Sunyi, I was going to ask, because it is such a idea-driven book, that the one core idea of it is kind of it gets everyone, doesn't it? Everyone goes, oh, what? They do what? Where did that come from, the idea that these people that exist that need to consume books, literally consume
it
books.
Came from lots of different places. There, knowledge eaters is kind of a thing. Anyway, there are Japanese yokai who eat books. There's a manga called Book Eater.
Right, okay.
If you're into that kind of thing.
No, I'm not. Right, okay.
I've only read a tiny bit of it. And I think just watching too many bad 90s cartoons when I was a kid, there was this old cartoon called Gargoyles, which is really good. It's like a fantasy cartoon. And it has this sorcerer called Macbeth, and he eats books to gain their power and their magic. It's a very visceral scene. I think so, all of those kind of aesthetics. And then just, we talk about books like they're food anyway. It's a natural extension, I think. We talk about media like it's consuming it. I used to talk about books like they were meals to my partner, you know, just refer to them as heavy or light or whatever.
Yeah, you're a voracious reader, aren't you?
That's how it's all stayed. And I guess my follow-up question is, why on earth is the cover of your book not made out of rice paper or some other edible material?
Too expensive.
Yeah, it would be good though, wouldn't it? Maybe if you get, once you've done the other two books and they're massively successful and they let you do the sequel, I think there's got to be some kind of edible first edition going out there, hasn't there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Which changes flavour as you kind of nibble your way through it.
Maybe not great for the library book scene. That'd be weird. But you literally get like a half-eaten book on your thing. But
maybe just individual pages as canapes at the launch party.
Just
nibble on a few words,
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's all sorted then, isn't it? That's great.
You're listening to the Failing Writers Podcast, to literary advancement and progress, what WKD Blue is to the world of fine wine. Bottoms up.
So in terms of you saying, so the standalone books, are they standalone, or are they in the same universe, or?
They're standalone.
Right. Oh, so you need to have a completely brand new idea.
Yeah.
Publishers.
I mean, it's a weird contract. It's basically like, I can't really write anything touching that universe until this is done.
Right, okay. Well, that focuses the mind, doesn't it?
It's really interesting. I get the reasoning for it, which is they don't want it to, the first three books you write are very important. They don't want it to become like The Adventures of Devon and Hester, female Dresden Files, which you can get locked into.
Yeah.
And I completely get that. Also, I was dead ready for a break, so I was happy to do something else. But yeah, they're completely standalone. The next one is like a historical fantasy set in Hong Kong. It's very different.
Oh, right, okay. I think that's actually quite encouraging. I don't know if you'd agree, boys, but you know, in my mind of writing, I don't think I would jump into writing any kind of serial stuff anyway. I think a standalone one-idea book is more...
It is for me,
As well. Although I think once the pressure kicked in that you have to have an idea and we want another book soon, and also fans are starting to go... So when's the next one out?
You are jumping ahead to having fans there, though, John, aren't you?
So. I don't think it's too far away, Dave. Yeah, okay, I'm dreaming. But you know what I mean.
What sort of timescales are you working to then, Sunny, for the next?
So Tor is really good with time. I mean, theoretically, the date branding of the second one was, I think, April last year, and they were just like, when it's ready, it's ready.
Oh, cool.
I mean, in the end, it hurts me, not them. I get paid later, not sooner. Yeah, so.
True.
I think it will vary by publisher, and it's editor dependent as well.
And what are you like as a person with deadlines? Are you do you blur the lines on the old deadlines, or are you done and dusted beforehand?
I like to have a deadline, even if it's a soft one. It just kind of lights a fire under your chair a little bit.
Definitely. We've absolutely found that and agree with that.
We tend to keep all our deadlines quite soft.
Yeah,
I mean, they're mostly kind of liquidy, translucent deadlines, but yeah. And in terms of your sort of daily, I mean, is it a daily sit down, and do you treat it as 9 to 5 work, or are you more, how do you work as a writer?
I've never written daily. I've never written 9 to 5. And the reason for that is I've always written when I had small children. Both of whom have special needs. My son particularly, I mean, there was a period of time you couldn't leave him alone for 5 or 10 minutes or he'd be getting into trouble.
Right, okay.
He's really calmed down with age. My son is non-speaking autistic, to clarify. So he's got some behavioral issues going on. But he's at school now. I always tried to do kind of writing in my head. I would do arranging in my head, and then when I had time, would sit down and essentially do sprints. And that wasn't always every day, and it definitely wasn't in long stretches. So this is the book I'm writing now is the first one where I've had big blocks of time to sit and write. And I thought that would make it go faster, and instead I just found more ways to procrastinate. So
that was going to be my next question,
I think I've just trained myself to write in small bursts, and I can't get away from that.
That's interesting, the idea of writing in your head. I find that really interesting because I'm not sure.
See,
I
would just lose all that, I think. I love the short burst thing. That's me. I'm down for that. I can, Yeah.
Yeah.
Do that.
But, I can
but
do
the
that.
Idea of planning out all this stuff and then being able to come back to it and actually somehow look at it in my head.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I can do that with a 30 second advert.
Yeah.
I can write a third, but yeah, anything longer than 30 seconds, I'm
too much. Just to have a rough sense of it. Yeah. And then there's a tool I've been making use of this year. It's called Squibbler, I think. If you look at it online, it's called the Most Dangerous Writing App. And basically, it's just like a blank web page. And you set a timer for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, or 10 minutes. And you start writing. And if you stop for more than a couple of seconds, it deletes everything you've written. So it's hard.
Wait.
Dave, you invented that a few weeks ago.
I've invented it, and it's already been invented.
Dave did actually literally invent that on the podcast a couple of weeks back.
You should do
and
it.
Someone's done it probably better than he
it's
ever
such
was.
Such an adrenaline rush.
The only difference with my version, it set fire to it rather than just delete it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, that was your idea. Yeah, your idea was a bit more violent.
But
when it works, though.
Oh, that's validation, yeah.
Yeah, when it works, you get like 500 words in 20 minutes. It's fantastic.
I mean, they're all rubbish. It just gives you that. Yeah, you get quite a lot of words.
Yeah.
But it gives you that constant impetus to just keep going, isn't it? Not sort of dwell too much on what's gone before. Just get something else down.
Yeah, we could have done with that with the other week when we were doing our live train of thought stuff on the podcast. That would have been. Although we would have just come back to presenting back and gone, yeah, I've got nothing. It's deleted it. So we would have, that's. I like that. That's an interesting idea. That
it is.
We'll
have to have a go on
that. I do devolve into writing bullet points a lot, and I did that as well when I had limited time, and then I would just go back and flesh out bullet points from an outline into a text, so just to get the order of things down, then you start filling in words.
It's getting the ideas out, isn't it? Getting the structure out there, and then you can, like you say, you can flesh it out at a later time. So what stage is that second book at? Is
probably 60,000 words. The structure is all there. It took me about a year to pin the idea down. I just kept throwing ideas out the window.
Right. Did you feel, like Dave was saying, that kind of pressure to have the idea? Was there a point where the idea wasn't really coming, or you were having kind of half ideas that you kind of knew weren't really good enough, but you're trying to convince yourself you were, but then eventually you go, no, that's a stupid idea.
I would hand in... I think early on I talked to my editor about ideas, and she kind of said, well, these are all basically projects that you previously abandoned and want to bring back to life. Think of something completely new,
something
you've not done before. And she just kind of gave me deadlines for that. And this is the something completely new that I'm trying to do. But there was a lot of, you know, it's Tora going, well, we want you to write something that's completely different, but also the same to what you wrote before. And it should be similar, but not too similar, and different, but not too different. And genre, but also not too genre. So a lot of stuff was actually rejected. Some of it by her, some of it by me, her saying, this is too literary, this is too sci-fi, this is too fantasy. You're looking for that middle line between them. That kind of commercial pressure was very new and very daunting.
So for this book, because you grew up in Hong Kong, didn't you? So you've kind of gone back to where you grew up in your childhood. Have you a really good memory of that? When did you move?
I've actually lived in the UK longer. So I moved 17 years ago. But my schooling was there. This is set more older, kind of World War II, which is during the Japanese occupation, which is my grandmother lived through.
Right.
So it is a bit older. But yeah, it helps to know the land. I think the first book I ever tried to write was epic fantasy, and I discovered I really don't like secondary world building, which is why the world in that is totally destroyed, because I couldn't be bothered inventing loads of stuff for it. It's just like, it's an apocalyptic wasteland.
Brilliant, there's nothing there, nothing at all, nothing to describe.
Yeah, nothing. Let's there. There's on. No animals. No animals.
Featureless desert,
Did this book require a lot of research?
Hong Kong one, it did, into the war eras and stuff.
And how did you find that then? Because that must have been quite personal at the same time, like you say, with your family links.
Yeah, I think some of it was new, and a lot of it is interesting. The Chinese side of the war isn't studied very much in the West. I was telling my editor a bit about it, how like the Japanese actually launched a double attack on the same day they attacked Pearl Harbor. They also attacked Hong Kong. And you only ever hear about Pearl Harbor, but those two attacks were simultaneous. And there's a lot of stuff going on. It's very different. Very different from a book set in the 90s in Britain.
Yeah, I would say hurry up and get it finished, because it sounds really interesting. I quite fancy reading that.
Thank you. Has ghosts in it, though.
Of course. That's why we invited you on the Halloween edition.
That's it, exactly. I remember reading a bit in your blog about the fact that one of the reasons you wrote the book Eaters was the fact that you kept reading stuff. I think you kept reading stuff on Twitter. It was basically people saying that... you can't do any more with the vampire genre. It's done. You know, everyone's done everything there is possible to do with it. And you've definitely found an angle. You know, you've worked an angle there, which I think is great. And are you quite a stubborn person then?
Some would say stubborn, some might say very petty. A little bit of both going on there. I need to not let Twitter get to me, but yeah, it just annoyed me a lot, I think. It was one of those really dumb takes that there's 1,000 of every day on that website.
Yeah, that's quite a lot.
And is it partly because you had a vampire story in your head already and you were like, no, I'm sorry, I'm gonna write this? Or is it just seeing somebody write that and go, right?
I think they remain popular because they're a good source of conflict, where they have to do something evil just to survive. And I think as well, there's loads of vampires. They belong to every myth. Kai borrows from Filipino Mananangals a lot with his tongue and stuff. And there's only ever like Dracula that you see, or Twilight kind of things. Mm. Says something that Twilight is an innovation on the vampire genre. I mean,
that was really interesting because I sort of looked into it, because there's a character in the book who is kind of studying vampires and knows a lot about the kind of the history of vampires. And I don't know how much of that is actually taken from, you know, the actual truth or anything.
From real vampires.
Exactly, real vampires from around the world.
All of them. Yeah. All the historical ones he mentioned exist.
Yeah, well, that's what I assumed. And I didn't realize that the whole myth kind of goes back millennia. I always thought it was a kind of a 19th century invention. You know, starting with the sort of gothic horror around the, you know, sort of Victorian times. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, not Frankenstein, but that kind of period, that competition produced a book called The Vampire, didn't it? Polidori, who was, I think, Byron's physician, which I think was sort of loosely based on Byron. And I sort of associated all that stuff with that period. But actually, there's myths of blood-sucking night crawlers going back hundreds of years and right across the world as well, China and South America. And I thought that's interesting. Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it does make you wonder.
Got to be some truth in it, hasn't it? Yeah.
I think it might have had a resurgence in that time, because that's when we started really writing novels in English. And that revives them a bit, but they were definitely always there.
Yeah. And we started writing the rules as well. Mm. And in a way that makes it, that sort of hones it, doesn't it? It sort of brings it to the fore.
Yeah.
Please do tell folk about the podcast, not just friends and colleagues. Open the window now. Shout out. Tell them all. Tell everyone! Or you can just write a review online. That helps too.
Sonia, as you know, we held a little Halloween competition, sort of a little mini Twitter tournament, if you like. Where?
Well, and what did you decide to call it, John? What was your name?
It was called Trick or Tweet. It was called. And we basically asked writers to have a go at writing a spooky story in just 280 characters or less in a tweet. And at the time, you very kindly agreed to have a little go yourself. Did you manage to round to having a go at that?
I did, but I think it falls on the comedy side of horror.
Oh, that's okay. We've had a few of those as well.
Me and John did some examples, and ours did pretty much, didn't we? It's funny, we were saying in the episode that me and John did some sort of examples, how because of the limitation, they're very much ours, certainly, were kind of styled almost like jokes with sort of a setup and then a punchline to some extent.
Yeah, like a little twist at the end.
Yeah. It has been said that your writing is laughable, Tom. So
that's true, yeah. Intentionally or otherwise.
Yeah, when we try and write a joke, it's hardly wrong, but yeah, when we're not trying, it's easy.
Yeah. So, do you want to share it with us, Sonny?
All right, it is very silly, but it goes, after many years in the query trenches, the author finally had an agent. They were so excited, this was the best moment of their life. Then the next day they went on submission. And if you've ever been on submission, that will make sense as for why it's a horror story. If you haven't, it might just be a bit weird. Sorry. But you know, you think that when you get an agent, it's like, I remember hearing an industry podcast once that the day you get your agent is probably the happiest you'll ever feel in publishing, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, there's an element of truth to that because submission is worse.
Yeah, so getting the agent can be just happiness and celebration and the start of something amazing. And then all the bits after that, sort of get the impression it's just kind of anxiety, pressure, rejection.
Yeah.
Just like lots of mildly to medium negative stuff, really. And eventually you might get a book published.
Yes. And increasingly everything is kind of out of your control with it.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you get to that submission stage, how long does it normally take? I mean, presumably some publishers will just take the book and go, right, I'll take that exactly as it is and I'm going to publish it because it's perfect. But I'm guessing that's very rare. But is it a case of, at that stage, lots of rewrites, sometimes going back to the drawing board or just getting binned altogether? What's how is it?
Okay, so the answer is there is no normal.
Yeah.
I've encountered books that were on submission for 3 to 5 years. I have a friend that publisher sat on his book thinking about it for 3 years and then said no. And then his agent dropped him. He's all right. He's published now, but it was an experience. The fastest I've ever heard of for adult fiction was a lady who books went from agent offer to pub deal in 48 hours.
Oh my God. And what?
Yeah, I think like her agent didn't even go on submission. She just rang the editors and said, this is an auction, bid or don't. You know, it's case by case. So the first book I had on submission spent about 18 months dying very slowly. And I think we first started getting rejections at the 3 or 4 month mark. The second book I had on submission sold in 4 days.
Wow.
I mean, the experience is just crazy. It can be so different. At the moment, I mean, when I was queering in 2018, they were saying kind of, if you write adult sci-fi and fantasy and it's your first book, maybe 6 to 10 months before a deal kind of happens. It's probably longer than that now. Post-COVID, everything has doubled or tripled.
Blimey. And then you've got to wait for it. How long for it, once it's successful, how long are you waiting for it to be actually published? I'm guessing it's like another year or something.
It was 2 and a bit years for me.
Wow.
It was, I think, 3 years for a friend of mine, Scott, is another tour author. He sold and, I think he was about 3 or 4 years. He's waiting to publish. It's usually at least 18 months. I had a lot of editing to do, and Tor likes to have a year to market in advance. So it will vary a bit by publisher. If your publisher only wants to market 6 months in advance, you need less time.
Yeah.
So it really varies.
You can see why some people self-publish, don't you?
Yeah, you can. I suppose once you get going, though, then it starts to feel like, you know, you've written the book, you've handed it in, you've always got something coming out. It's just getting
Door. And you're writing the next one while you're submitting, presumably. Yeah. So you're never kind of just twiddling your thumbs waiting for
It's just getting through that door. It takes ages. Yeah. But once you get going, there's kind of a schedule.
Yeah. So Sun Yi's now in the easy bit, really. Do you mean it's just kind of write a book, sell a book while you're writing another book?
Hopefully.
Easy now. You're on a roll. Oh, well. Hey, would you like to hear some of the competition entries?
Go for it.
Tom, read us one.
Well, the few that caught my eye, actually. I quite like the one from Ellipsis Zine. I don't remember that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that one.
So it goes like this. The mad old man who usually sat next to me missed the bus. Finally, a seat to myself. And I'm carving through rush hour traffic in peace. He was full of stories. Nonsense, mostly. He once tried to convince me he was older than time. That he'd lived so long because he'd avoided death.
It's nice that.
So
it's good.
Yeah. So he didn't get on the bus.
Nice.
What happens next?
That's a hey, what? And then you have to slightly backtrack in your mind and go, oh, well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very good. Very good.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked how it kind of built a little world quite quickly. And obviously, it's got to do it quickly, but you could kind of see it, couldn't you?
Kinda
in there with it.
That's right. I've got another one here that invokes a nice little world with its own like supernatural rules very quickly and efficiently. And it goes like this. This one is by Simon Curtis. It sits in the glass case at the top of the stairs. It left life screaming at its own fate. Now the prelate's skull only makes a sound to foretell someone else's. She lay in her bed. The glass began to rattle. She could hear it. then the screams. First his, then hers, then nothing.
Ooh.
Well, that was quite nice. Do you know what I mean? It sets up all these questions, and you're kind of in there, like, who the hell is this person? Why is their skull got this sort of magic ability, and what is going, who is she? And I like stuff like that. I like being left with like this world that you've set up and lots of questions intrigue. About it. But yeah, thought that was good. Davey, you got any?
I quite like this one, just because I can almost see myself doing something like this in an alternate universe. This is by Jeff Harrison. Out in the fog was a groan with each blast of wind. Dad had been busy again. I'd heard the echoing of hammering and nailing of spikes, and then the screams. The trespasser tree, we kids called it. Intruders should know not to come onto our land for any reason. There are signs.
I like that one.
A good last line, isn't it? There are signs.
There are signs. Like, well, yeah, exactly. It's like I like the fact it just makes the hammering of somebody to a tree perfectly acceptable because there was a sign. So it's your own.
I mean, I took it that those were the kids nailed to the tree were the signs.
I didn't pluck that one.
I don't know if it was.
That seems very obvious to stay away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Kids who've been nailed to a tree. Yeah. Wouldn't be any more kids for a little while at least.
Well, Sunny, thank you so much for joining us. And good luck with, finishing book two first, I guess. But good luck with book two when it comes out. It sounds really interesting.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks
sharing
a lot.
Your journey and those little stories of failure that we like to cling to, even if you are turning out to
be quite successful. And we'll leave a link to the blog on our show notes as well, so if people want to have a look,
well
at
worth
that,
the read.
Very
yeah,
worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely worth
oh, thank you so much.
Lovely.
Thanks, Sonia.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Take care.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. So yeah, thanks
to Sonia.
Oh, we're all
let's
saying
get
thanks.
On with
everyone say thank you,
Sonia.
Thank you, Sonia.
Thanks, Sonia.
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? A bit different that one. They're all different, aren't they? It's almost like
everyone is different people
have different experiences, isn't it? That's what I'm starting to realise with this podcast.
Well, it's only by speaking to different people that you begin to understand.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely. So. No, just it's just always interesting, isn't it? Hearing how people work or come up with their ideas or how they got to, then there's just it makes you realise exactly. There's just a million different ways. There isn't a, despite what people will say on Twitter that this is the only way you have to treat it like a job and work 9 till 5 and
there's
a million different ways to do it. So
there was a bit that struck me as well about the whole idea of sort of failing is when Sunny was talking about the sort of odds of success at various different levels, it made me think, actually, a lot of it depends on what your idea of success is.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? For like, she was saying like, the chances of actually getting an agent are 1 in 1,000 and the chances of that agent submission doing this is 1 in whatever. And then, the number of people who leave the industry after 3 books or whatever, well, blimmin' heck, I wouldn't mind leaving the industry after 3 books. Do you know what I mean? I would see that as success compared to where I am. Do you know what I mean? So it's all about like what you view as being your own sort of definition of success.
That's right. Yeah.
Is what determines whether you're a failure or not.
Yeah, it's interesting that's what you took from it, because what I took from it was there's absolutely no point doing anything. It's all completely pointless. Do you mean like it doesn't matter what you do? Even if you write something absolutely brilliant, there's still a pretty good chance it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, that'll be that.
It's slightly disheartening.
But that is the point, though, isn't it, Tommy? What you really should be doing is trying to write something brilliant just for the sake of writing something brilliant.
Yes.
That in itself isn't it massively
about perseverance. That's it.
Yeah.
It's just doing it because you like doing it and persevering with it. It's like that thing about, rewriting the entire book 4 times once every month.
Yeah.
I mean, that is for me, for someone like me, that is such an upsetting idea.
I think the real lesson here is that you could say aim for the stars and possibly you might hit the moon, whereas what you could just do is aim at something that's really, really close and easy to hit.
Mm.
And you've got a very good chance of actually doing that. And then just call that a success.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how you stop being
Define your own success. That's
first step. Yeah. Just finish writing something.
I feel like we should Photoshop that onto maybe this picture of like a sunrise in the Caribbean or something.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
some squirrely writing.
Yeah.
And then post it on Twitter. People will love that.
Lower your standards to achieve happiness.
Well, there's some truth in that.
I suppose the problem with that is that if you do aim at something
we're probably
that's
preaching
really close,
to the converted for our listeners, Dave, to be honest.
But if you do aim at something really close and easy to hit,
then you
miss
that.
Manage to
oh my
miss
God.
It, this just makes it even worse.
We would probably aim for something really close to us, completely miss it, and hit the moon. Turn it on its head.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, what we do need to do right now is aim to declare a winner of our trick or tweet competition.
Good aim, Tom.
Now, we have not discussed this at all.
No.
Normally, we would have heated backroom discussions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost as though we haven't planned it.
But you say that, but we have planned that we're going to do it. We're going to do it now. We're going
to plan.
We're going to say what we think. We're going to hammer it out now, and you're going to hear us discuss and decide the winner live.
Yeah. Instead of sitting around a table with cigars like 12 angry men, we're just going to do it. It's just going to happen.
We're going to be three mildly irked men.
Yeah.
And that's why this week the podcast is 4 hours long. sorry about that.
And most of it's just us sulking going, no, not that
no.
one. Mine. that one. Should be mine.
Lying in
no,
the
I'm
sand.
No, I'm not moving. I'm not compromising.
Do you know what would be amazing? No. This won't happen, but wouldn't it be amazing if we all picked exactly the same three? As
and it's just like
three?
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Or we could do what clients do when you go and present radio adverts to them, and we'll just take the first line of one of them, get the middle bit of another, and the end of another one.
Yeah.
And then we'll go, yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
That'll be all right. Well, interestingly, speaking about top three, so what we said, we'd each pick a top three, which is quite tricky in the end, actually. I've also picked another three or four that kind of wanted in my top three, but didn't get there.
I have. I've got a few little shouty-outies
so
as well, Tommy.
So one of the ones in my top three has already been read out.
Has it?
Ooh.
Yeah. And it was the one that you read out, Dave.
Was it Jeff's?
Jeff Harrison's.
Ah.
Oh, yeah.
That made it into my top three. I really like that one.
That made it into my top four.
Ooh.
As it happens.
Yes, that was one of my top three.
That's a nice one, that.
Again, I could kind of see it, and it was just such a simple, hideous idea, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Like, it's awful. It's absolutely awful. But the way it's treated is just as if it's like, this
that's
is normal.
Should happen.
So that was in there for me. So that's a possible. Isn't
so
it?
Jeff's in the top nine.
He's in the mix. He's in the mix.
Yeah.
John, have you got one to throw in the mix?
Well, I have got one. Yeah.
Which one is it?
I really like this one.
Which one is it?
I absolutely loved it, and I'd love it to go into the winner's pile. I sort of feel slightly duty bound to leave it out for one simple reason, and that it's not that spooky.
I just thought it
was brilliant. And it was Phil Oddy, and it goes like this. Get followers, increase engagements, make money. I use this one weird trick to pay off my debt in weeks. You won't believe what happened next. Click here. www.webuyanysouls.com/join us. Disclosure, affiliate link.
Yeah, that made it into my mentions. Yeah. Honourable mentions, that one.
That's also in my top three.
Just
bizarrely
brilliant.
Enough, it's really good, isn't it? It's really just well made. I think there was a comment like directly below it from somebody that said this is far too real.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because it just it's just brilliantly
I looked
done.
At it. When I first glanced at it, I thought, is that spam? We got some spam.
I immediately scanned over it when
I did
first
as
saw
well.
It. I thought, this is ridiculous.
Do you think Phil, when he was doing it, had that thought of, I've done this really well, I'm going to send it. I hope they don't just like ignore it and delete it or whatever. That kind of thing where you're kind of taking a bit of a risk.
A bit of
subverting the
entire genre.
But using
the fact that it's a tweet.
It was only when I noticed it said .com that I went, it isn't.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well done, Phil. I really like that one.
Yeah, I like that one too.
But there is some synergy going on here, isn't there?
Yeah. Mm. Dave, have you got another one for the top pile?
Well, okay. Another one that I really liked. And also another one that has an element of sort of, I could see that happening, is by Salisbury writer.
Mm.
Mother never buys pumpkins, but I wasn't missing out this year. I carve a scary face through tough skin. Scooping out fleshy insides, I carefully place a flickering candle in the cavity I've made. It's perfect. I wipe bloody hands clean. She should have bought me a pumpkin.
Yeah, that was in my mentions.
I had that one as well. You know what we were saying about some of these being like jokes, and that's particularly nice, isn't it, within that frame of reference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a very wicked little smile.
Yeah.
To it.
And but the thing is, it's one of those where you kind of, you know what's going to happen, but it's still good when it does.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's holding some of the cards back, but it's giving you a decent glimpse.
Yeah.
You're in it, you're doing it jointly, aren't you? You're kind of reading it along with the writer in terms of the idea being opened up. It's not a shock. It's just a, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah,
no, it's very nicely put together, and I love that last line.
Yeah, exactly.
She should have bought me a pumpkin.
Yeah, it's not my fault.
Yeah, it's the perfect psycho line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Someone who blames the victim.
Again, it's
the
like there
commit.
Are signs. It's it's.
Did she not learn with Dad last year? Come on.
Yeah, it's just making it all normal.
It's very good.
She bloody well should have bought you a pumpkin. So basically, it's her fault.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you got another one,
Ooh,
Tommy?
Yeah. Should I go with my absolute favourite?
Ooh.
I don't know.
Go on, then.
I've got,
okay, yeah,
I've got two more in my top pile.
Oh, well, hang on. Don't go favourite yet, then. Well,
don't tell us which is your favourite, because that then influences potentially our
No, right. Oh, what do I do?
Pick the next one at
I'm just going to pick one and close my eyes. This one was by Joanne, whose Twitter handle is @punsandjulie. She quickly regrets her midnight run. The dark park is eerie. Every rustle makes a jump. She doesn't see the ghostly figure, though. The hidden man does. Terrified, he tries to flee the evil, but is engulfed. As the man and apparition vanish, she just hears the clatter of a knife. So the spooky ghost man actually saves the lady.
Saves the lady.
He's a nice ghost.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's a nice,
so you think,
a happy,
oh, ghost.
Spooky ghost.
The ghost
man.
Is going to get her. Hold on a minute. The ghost has saved her. What a nice ghost.
And
nice,
let
nice
or twisty. Wait. What if, hang on, what if the, no, Tom, what if the ghost was holding the knife?
Oh, come on.
And the man
clever.
Sacrificed himself to the
yes.
Ghost.
Ooh.
To protect the
world. What if she was holding the knife and she was just pissed off she didn't get to use it?
It's a triple twist.
There are so many.
Could be anything.
Yeah.
I liked it because it was kind of classic creepy, wasn't it? Like Midnight Run Park. Do you mean it's kind of obvious, inverted commas, if you like. But then it's got that nice little twist where the ghost has done something nice.
Yeah. It is one of those where like the very first line is a really good setup.
Yes.
Like you can sort of see straight away, what was it like? She instantly regrets.
She quickly regrets her midnight run.
Yeah, like that. You're there, aren't you? Straight away, where she is, what's going on. You know exactly what type of fear is involved.
So a lot of work done quickly in it. Obviously, what has to be a very short story.
Yeah.
Brilliant, that one. Mm. Jonathan, what have you got?
Jonathan?
What's on the list?
What have I got here? I've got... Oh, here we go. One from I Couldn't Car Less. And it goes like this. Between sleep and wake, a hand on my leg. No. Yes. Heart quickens. Wrench into now. Still there. Snap to sitting. What? Mom. Exhale. You scared the shit out of me. I see her now. She slides next to me. So cold. Skin slipping, some bone, but here. Careful what you wish for. I thought that was good. It's got Pet Sematary vibes, that one, hasn't it? But I liked the unconventional style of it too. It's very stream of consciousness, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah,
it was.
It was.
Yeah,
it was for those that don't know, we did an episode on that recently, which is why I'm saying it like that. But yeah, I liked that a lot. I love these, the acceptance at the end, but here. I thought that was really nice, so good.
Yeah.
That last line, funnily enough, if I'm going to be really like hypercritical, careful what you wish for, it sort of takes you out of it a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's maybe a little bit too much, do you know what I mean? But it's quite efficient at explaining what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that this person has wished that their dead mother is, they've wished them back into being somehow. But yeah, I just thought it was like it's happening right now. And done very well. And you couldn't quite work out exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
But you get enough to sort of make it quite creepy. And that so-called skin slipping, some bone, surrenders.
Some bone, yeah. Yeah. No, like, yeah.
But here, you know, that just, but she's here, so it's all good.
Mm.
Yeah. I thought that was good.
Nice. Right. My last one is, I think, almost certainly the shortest one. And I like the bravery of it being a 280-character challenge and this person going, what, don't even need half
need
that.
Many?
Hold my beer, basically. This is by Leah Crawford. She was alone in the dark when she reached out for the torch. The torch was put in her hand.
Yeah.
It's like a distillation of a horror story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like
it's
the fewest possible.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's just the call was coming from in the house, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, it's like, as you were saying before about writing yours, like making it a joke. That's a proper,
Jimmy Carr
stripped down. Here's the absolute minimum you need for a setup. Mm. And there's the punchline.
Yeah. It's like an exercise almost. It's like an exercise in brevity, isn't it?
Yeah. You
know, how few words can you use to get a little shiver?
Yeah.
Do you think, though...
It's still atmospheric.
Do you think that you could get that premise to work a bit harder? Like, I feel like this person, who I actually know, because she's my sister-in-law...
is it now?
I feel like, Leah, if I'm going to criticise you...
Let's make this... deeply personal, John.
She's definitely done it as like a how few words can you use?
Yeah.
Because, do you know what I mean? Because you could definitely get that premise to work a bit harder if you set it a bit more. If it was like a little girl in a tent or something outside and she's camping in the garden.
Well, that becomes a different thing though, doesn't it? I think that's, you're just bitter about that Christmas present she gave you the year before last, aren't you?
How did you know about that? Because
you mentioned it an awful lot, John. An awful lot. But yeah, no, I think that becomes a different thing.
No, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
I love the fact that she's done that.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it was also in my list, so there you go.
Do you know, on that one, seeing as all gloves are off and we can say what we like about that one now, as John said, for me, it was just, that would have made it into my list, I think, but just those last few words just felt that they weren't quite right.
The torch was put in her hand.
Just felt a bit passive and I wanted it to be just a bit more delicately placed, or do you know what I mean? Or she felt the weight of the torch in her hand, just something a bit more, just seemed a little bit passive.
Well,
it is, I suppose it is passive because it's being done to her.
Yeah, it's nice of you to stick up for her, John, because she upped her present game last Christmas. I think that's nice.
Yeah, good, I liked it, Leah, and I don't know you.
Look,
so
we've worked hard on our relationship. So,
but no, it's really nice good. It's good. Though.
Yeah, it is very good. Well done, Leah.
Has anyone got any left?
I've got my absolute favourite, and I'm going to be really upset if this doesn't win. I just thought this one was brilliant. It was so brilliant that I was upset that it got entered early on because I thought, well, people are going to read that and not bother entering now, aren't they?
Oh, I think I know what it is. I've just realised. Yeah.
And it's by A Ghoul Writes. You know that movie where, after they watch a videotape, they die within a week? This is the literary version. Enjoy your last 7 days.
Yes, that is nice, that one, isn't
it? I thought that was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. It tells you enough about the movie, so if you knew nothing about it, it still makes sense. But if you know about the movie and things like The Ring and stuff like that, then you get all that as well. But just the subverting the competition itself... to be and you've got no option, but you've read it, and once you've read it, it's too late.
Yeah,
it's just, I think that's great. I think that was just so
it really got me when I read it the first time. It's funny, isn't it, because it's like, okay, it is brilliant, but it's also, it's relying on something that exists. It's like derivative.
I know what you mean. It's taking an idea and reflecting.
It is good.
It's still good, can't deny it. It's still good. It still works.
So we got to pick a winner now.
Oh, no.
Out of all them.
Well, it's that one, isn't it? So easy done. Job done. Yeah?
Oh.
See, this is why we have judges. This is why we have star judges.
Yeah.
Oh, I
Sun Ye, come back. Why didn't we get...
We should never let her go. Just go, should have made a choose.
Just point right, to
what's,
that one.
What's let's work this out. What's your favourite, John?
Yeah, what's your absolute favourite?
Oh, yeah, okay, that's a good way.
Because if there's one where one of us has got an absolute favourite and the other two go, actually, yeah, I do like that one as well, yeah, then that swings
I
it, doesn't it?
There were a couple of them that went into both our lists, so they should definitely end up being
we
in our very,
make
very
a
small list.
Smaller list, John. Just
that's
pick
what I'm saying.
One.
There what, will be a smaller list, won't there?
Pick one. Well, you need a list of one.
Okay.
Just pick one. Which one would you pick? If you had to pick one, if you were the judge, which one would you pick?
Come back to me. You choose
no,
yours.
No, you've got to pick now.
You choose yours.
No, we're doing it now, so you've got to pick now.
What's yours, Tommy?
Well, I just told you mine, haven't I?
Tom's just said
what's,
his.
What's yours, Dave?
Not so easy now, is it?
Do you know what? See? I think it's Phil Oddy.
Oh. Yeah, you see, it's very good. It's not spooky,
it's not spooky.
It's not spooky. It isn't spooky.
And that was in the description. It will be judged on spooky.
And the Ghoul Writes one that I said, that does the same kind of thing. It's riffing on
I didn't read that bit about it happening. This is what happens when you set a competition when I'm not here. I don't know the judging criteria.
We did say a spooky story. I mean, we literally said,
not to me.
Story.
You didn't say that to me.
Original tweet.
Emojis of pumpkins and ghost day.
I can't read emojis.
Come on.
All right. Come on, John. What's your number
I think
one?
I'm going to put through Salisbury Writer, the carving out the pumpkins, and I'm for partly the reason that someone else picked it as
no,
well.
No, just pick what you think.
No, I like it. I can't decide between the three, so I'm just going with that one because I think it's really good.
Well, I mean, I've got to say that was also in my top three, wasn't it? So
and that was in my that was at the top of my list of other ones worth a mention. I think we need to decide between that one then and probably Jeff Harrison's because we all like that one as well. That got into two top lists and your mention.
We all like that
well,
one.
Well, I can say because I've already said that Jeff Harrison was originally in my top four, whereas Salisbury Writer was originally in my top three. So out of those two, I would vote for
should we just split the prize between everyone and give everyone a pound? That'd be better. And cut the T-shirt up.
No. No, we've got to give it to Salisbury Writer, I think. I think it has to go there.
I think I'm going to vote for Salisbury Writer. Tom?
All I can see is Jeff's little face now. Just crying. Well, just
Tommy, that's partly your fault because you brought him back
because
in
he was on bit. Two people's top list and in your list as well.
No, you brought his hopes
you
right
you said, oh,
now.
Soldier Wright was in two people's top list. So I'm saying, well, Jeff was in two people's top list.
Jeff's already got a T-shirt, though. So he's
you can't take past things into it. This is why you said Leah Crawford couldn't win anything because of that 2020 Christmas present. Right. I mean, I'm generally annoyed that Ghoul Wright hasn't won, so I don't know what to say. I think we've probably just got to go with you guys there.
The winner is Salisbury Writer.
Yeah.
It was a close run thing.
It did, I mean, it ticked all the boxes, isn't it? It's Halloween-y.
It did. Yeah, it had the jokey thing.
Yeah.
It was scary. Fun, yeah, but disturbing.
And you're right about the psychological sentiment twisty. Of that last line. It's just lovely, isn't it? She should have brought me. She should have brought me a pumpkin. You can always see it with just like shrugging the shoulders.
Brought it on
proper
herself.
Psycho.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done, mate.
So congratulations, Salisbury Writer.
And thank you to everyone who entered. Sorry if we haven't mentioned your story, but we got quite a lot. And we've already been waffling on for bloody ages anyway. So.
Yeah, congratulations to all, particularly those we've mentioned tonight.
I've got loads more that I want. I've still got loads more on my sheet here that I wanted to
I know,
read
I was
out.
Just thinking that looking at my list. So I've still got, but we haven't got time. We simply haven't got time. If you want to be read out on the podcast, then you just have to enter the next competition and do a little bit better,
exactly.
Won't you? But no, thank you to everyone. If you're listening to this and you haven't been on Twitter, they obviously are all on there. You can have a read of them yourself.
Yeah. Is that then? Have we got a winner?
That concludes today's literary festivities.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Oh, is that the end of the show? Is it the end of the show
as well? It's the end of everything, Dave. End of everything. All done.
Is that just the end?
Gone.
Brilliant.
Gone.
Right, okay.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
Goodbye. Or a greyhound race where they fixed it by making the dogs have a poo beforehand.
I never knew that.
that's what happened.
Yeah, that's the way you fix a greyhound race.
Yeah, no, apparently, if you have a look and see if any of them have a poo before and run faster.
But they make them poo.
I don't know if they make them poo. I don't know if they like waggle a finger up there or anything. Or, I don't know what's allowed or what's probably outlawed now.
Bit of X-Max.
But back in the day, yeah. You'd, yeah.
So what? So hang on, wait a minute. Yeah. Let's get this. Is it, if you want to win a greyhound race, is it better to have pooed or to have not pooed?
I think it's more about the dogs, Dave, really.
Okay. Let's just say, is it better if the dogs have pooed or not?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, obviously lose a bit of weight and just a bit more. You know what you like after you've had a... You're just a bit more, aren't you? A bit more free.
A bit more chilled.
I see, that's weird because my dog really, really pulls on the lead until he's had a poo and then he's a little bit less eager.
All right. Is he a
greyhound? But then he's not a greyhound.
It's not a greyhound, is it?
Not a greyhound, yeah.
Different dogs.
It's the opposite. Yeah. Different bogs for different dogs.
Very, very well. Yeah, absolutely.
Should we move on?
Where were we? What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Yeah. Do you know, I think that might end up getting edited and just put right at the end. You know, when we have those bits after the music kind of stopped.
I think that belongs there.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't belong.
How the hell did we get there? Anyway, what are we doing? Where am I?
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?